My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. It's Sunday, May 22nd, 2022. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival, subscribe for $3 a month. There's hours and hours and hours of bonus content behind the paywall. This is episode 575. I have a super special return guest that you know and love. It's Jim Search, comedian and podcaster. He's joining me on this episode. I'm going to share my conversation that I had with him, with you, in a few moments. Right now, just want to talk to you for a bit. Just want to take you behind the curtain, let you see the prop table and, you know, Crafty and all that good stuff. I'm breaking the fourth wall. I mean, I'm not actually recording this on Sunday. This is actually Friday, May 20th when I'm recording. And it's late afternoon. The sun's been trying to come out, but it's not. It's like it might rain. Who knows what's going to happen, but I know it's going to be a great Friday night. I'm just going to sit back, relax, light a candle, and watch some Amazon Prime. I just got into this show, The Wilds. Shout out to the Firestarter crew. I think it was Ba who recommended this, and it's good. It's about these young women, these high school age girls who are taking this fancy retreat. And they get on a plane and they're flying out. The plane crashes, or so they think. And it's kind of like a Lord of the Flies Lost situation. And really good. Really enjoying it so far. It's almost like Yellow Jackets. Yellow Jackets is more supernatural. And we don't know what the hell's going on. But it's very similar. The Wilds premiered season 2 earlier this year. And I like that too. I like Yellow Jackets also. So I'm enjoying that. I'm doing some stand up. I got some stand up coming up in next month. Hopefully there was talk of something happening this weekend, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But I know next month I'm going to be at the Bomb Shelter comedy show in the city. I'll let you know when that comes up. That's June 2nd. And then I'll be at the Stress Factory on the 15th. Ken Krantz and friends at the Stress Factory. I love performing at the Stress Factory, so I'm looking forward to that. There's more dates coming. Other than that, let's just get you to Jim Search. Let's just like stop messing around here and get you to Jim Search. Jim and I were just texting last weekend and I was like, dude, you got to come back on the pod. We talked about some stuff and things. You'll hear it. And we had a good time, and I hope you have a good time listening to my conversation with the great Jim search.
Vintage Polo dropped today, okay, where they dropped a bunch of old shirts from the 90s because they know that's what's selling right now. And there's like, I have two of the shirts that they just re-released. I have the vintage versions of those. And so it's like, and they're now sold out. So it's like, I could probably put the ones that I have up since they're all now sold out. And these are the original ones. These aren't the re-releases. So, you know, it just comes back to the point of just like, these aren't shirts that I bought that I could not resell. Like, and that's with anybody who's like collects Polo. Like,
where do you put them? Do you put them on StockX? Where do you, what do you do? eBay?
I'm an eBay guy. I've fucked with Grailed. I don't really like Grailed that much, to be honest. Okay. Just for selling, like,
yeah,
they take so, like, I got, like, I sold a pair of shorts on there and I got fucking whacked for, so like, I lost a good amount of money to their fees and all that shit. So, which, you know, look, I got my money out of it, but even still, it's just like, fuck this. I could just go through fucking Instagram and find someone to buy it.
Yeah. I've never sold anything online. I bought stuff. Yeah. Don't do it.
Don't do it, man. Get, you know, look, you don't want to be like me, Chris. You know,
well, I have my thing. I have like action figures that I bought.
Right.
Transformers and stuff like that. And
now, could you, is there like a resell? Like, could you I'm assuming you could, no?
I think you could, but the shit that I'm getting, like, there's some stuff that probably that I haven't opened yet that's probably worth something, but I don't know. I really don't want to do all that shit. I just think maybe if I get a bigger space, I just put them up. You know what I mean? Like, there's certain. Yeah. But I don't have that many, but I have enough, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. But I think if I was balling, like if I was a series regular on a TV show that was running for a long time, I'd probably have a room. Like, I think Kadeem Hardison from Dwayne Wayne.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of Dwayne Wayne fame from A Different World. He's a big collector guy, and he's on this, I forget the name of the company. It's not Hot Toys, but it's a company that does statues, and sometimes he goes on their YouTube channel and puts the statues together and geeks out over them and stuff like that. So you know, I don't know if I'd ever do anything like that, but I have a very, what do you call it, I'm a casual fan. I'm not super hardcore.
I feel you. I was kind of like, I mean, I'd always been like just kind of to that point of like, I wore Polo for 20 years, we'll say at this point, but probably within the last like 5 years, I really became like a collector and like, you know, was like looking for like pieces and shit like that. So
I like Polo. Yeah. I just like them because they're comfortable, they're good quality, and they have them at Destination XL.
Yes, you're the second person to say that.
Yeah, so I like them in good quality. I bought a hoodie, a new hoodie, because I have like three Polo hoodies because they're really comfortable, and I've kind of worn them out, you know, because I wear them so much. It's just like a sweater. But there was one there. I think I would like to try a cardigan at some point.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Get into it, man. Yeah. They make really nice cardigans.
Yeah. And I bought a Polo, a V-neck sweater when I interviewed William Shatner a couple of months ago. And I it was really nice. So I dig it, man.
That sealed the deal. That's what really elevated the interview.
I think so.
I think so. I think that's what took it to the next level. If you're asking me personally,
it gave me confidence. You're my one of my rap guys. I mean, I have Andy Klein from Three Guys on the show the week that we're recording. I just posted it yesterday, and we talked about the Black Star and Kendrick Lamar albums. You're more into it than I am with regards to having a vast knowledge of a lot of the new guys.
Yeah.
What's your take on the Kendrick?
So You know, I listened to it. I got, I'm probably about halfway through.
Okay.
At this point, I have to say, like, it's, I mean, this is kind of cliches, but it's just like, it's deep. It's very, yeah. it's heavy, heavy stuff. I mean, he's always been a very, like, sort of, a heavy sort of thoughtful rapper. Mm-hmm. But I think with this one, I mean, it's great. Like, I'm enjoying what I'm listening to, but it's just like, I have to take it in doses. Like, sure. I got through what, I don't know the name of the song, but it's like, he's like fighting with his girlfriend.
Oh,
in it.
Yeah.
We cry together. Yeah. Yeah. We cry together. Mm-hmm. And then at the end they're fucking.
Yeah.
And I mean, as I'm listening, I'm just like, God damn, like, it's just so, it's so intense. Like, it's just right. people rap screaming at each other. And I'm just like, oh my God, I got to fucking take a break from this.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting because it's like, I'm listening to it and I'm just like, wow, this sounds like you guys are in your early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this sounds like a toxic, unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
And yeah, it, you're by the end of it, you're fucking. Yeah. Okay. That's toxicity. Makes sense. Right. you're checking all the boxes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I've certainly been in my fair share of toxic relationships. But, you know, it's just like, it was a tell of just like, oh, I can see that he is young. Like, this sounds like a young person's, not to say that there aren't older people in toxic relationships, but that's like the hallmark of like your 20s and arguably even your early 30s. It's just like, wow, you're really dealing with some like bad people that are not good for you, but you keep fucking them anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I enjoy the album, like up to where I am. It's again, it's very heavy. I really have you. And I mean, I think he's brilliant. Like lyrically, I mean, that goes without saying, but, you know, I did catch a couple lines where I'm like, oh my God, I want to rewind that back again.
Yeah. So, do you normally take your time like that to listen, or you don't like to take it like all the way in at one sitting, or
is it? So, yeah. So I feel like with this work, with his album, this was one where I'm like, oh, and I've also like having listened to Kendrick, I know that like more so with his work, it is very specific. Like, you have to listen from beginning to end to really appreciate the whole body of work.
Right.
I think his track listing is very more so deliberate than other rappers.
Right.
Not to say that they're not every, I mean, obviously every rapper has a particular, you know, MO to how they design or to how they track list, but I think his are very, very intentional.
Oh, so, sure. Right.
So with his, specifically with his stuff, his albums, it's like, oh, I have to listen beginning to end, you know, to really get what he's trying to get into.
What about Pusha T?
You know, I got to give it a couple more listens. You know, I downloaded it. I was coming back from New Orleans, I think.
Okay.
And so I really wasn't like, I was just kind of on the move listening to it. There were a couple joints that I fucked with. I can't think of at the top of my head right now.
My favorite is the first record, Brambleton. Like, I think that's probably one of my favorite songs of the year so far.
Brambleton.
Yeah, it's I just love that production from Pharrell and everything just works so well to me on that one. It's just like, it's amazing.
You know, I will say, and I think Rod said it, he posted it at some point, but he was just like, the way like Pusha T still references cocaine after all these years, he's like the Bubba Gump of cocaine. He can talk about it.
Yeah, I think I did remember seeing that. Yeah.
He can talk about it in so many ways, man. He really, really is. God, he's getting into that cocaine, man.
And he makes it fun, though, because it's like Mobb Deep, you know, sometimes it could get a little cumbersome, even though they were great at it, talking about selling drugs and the gully, grimy stuff that they were doing. But it would just get bogged down. And the clips kind of made it fun. And if production wise, you know. And then, you know, once he framed it with Scorsese, he can do gangster movies till he's like
blue in the face.
Blue in the face. And, you know, for you know, Pusha talks about coke. He's like, yeah, it's just like you kind of revisit that when it's just like, oh, I want to hear some coke rap.
Yeah.
I'll listen to Pusha T.
Well, and, you know, and that's what's so, I think, interesting, because it's like, and I mean, this isn't a new thread that I'm coming up with, but it's just like when you people really outside of rap or outside of hip hop who don't really appreciate it for what it is are like, you know, it's always about this gangster mm-hmm. shit, or it's always about, you know, crime and da 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 da. And it's like, well, there are rappers who do talk about that a lot.
Yeah.
But then there's also rappers who don't. Right. And I go to certain rappers and I go to certain people if I want to hear some shit like that. Like,
yeah,
if I want to hear a song, like, I'll go listen to Master P if I want to hear some hard Southern rap. Like, mm-hmm. I know where the fuck I'm going and what I'm going to get into. Right.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, like, I'll go to, you know, if I want to hear, like, you know, a funny and just undeniably talented rapper, I'll go to Sean Price. Mm-hmm. I want to hear a sound from Brownsville, Brooklyn, that's the guy I'm going to go to, right?
Yeah.
If I want to hear about cocaine, I know who to go to.
Yeah.
If I want to hear about fucking, I go to Too Short. Like, I know the people that I need to listen to if I want to hear certain sounds.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what most people do anyway. And you know what I mean? Like, if you want to hear a certain thing, like, that's what you do instead of like bogging yourself down with it. And I got to the point where I just kind of forgot, like, you know, what was it? Maybe a month or two ago, maybe less than a month ago, that that clip about nostalgia came out with Kendrick and Pusha T and the new numerology around Kendrick's verse. You probably saw it pop up.
I didn't. No. What is this?
Oh, let me see if I can find it. It was just I'll vamp, but I think that there was like this clip.
Well, I know the song Nostalgia.
Yeah, I know you know the song.
Song.
It's just his verse, Kendrick Lamar, Nostalgia. It's like they were like, oh, the new one. I'll see if I can find this.
Is it like 9 ounces got you 10 and something comes with an extension?
Yeah, something like it, talking about his dad and just like, oh my God. And like it's from about it was a breakdown.
Huh.
Let me see if I can. Oh my God. Anytime you try to, it's got an ad blocker up. Maybe I'll edit this shit out. But it's just, let me see. Damn it. Okay, let me see if I can. Okay, I got the thing. It was from Dissect Podcast.
Okay. So
I think when I was doing the Black Eye Who Tips on Sunday, I think that somebody was talking about that. Let me see if I can share this. Can you see this?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, let's see.
When Kendrick Lamar said, could never show you the world I was in. He wasn't joking. The line is from Kendrick's feature on Pusha T's Nostalgia, and he continues by describing his childhood during the crack epidemic, using lines that feature the numbers 9 and 10.
When I was 10, back when 9 ounces had got you 10, and 9 times out of 10, niggas don't pay attention, and when there's tension in the air,
9's come with extension.
When you add up these 9s and 10s, you get 87. Why 87?
I was born in 87, my granddaddy.
The hidden sum being his birth year ties into the verse's childhood theme. But why use only 9s and 10s? 10 plus 9 is 19, completing the birth year in full, 1987. But he also specifically used 3 9s and 6 10s. Why?
I said, Daddy, one day I'ma get you right with 36 sips.
A zip of cocaine is an ounce, and 36 ounces is a brick. And speaking of bricks, Kendrick cites one of these in the verse's climactic line.
Go figure, motherfucker, every verse is a brick. Your son dope, nigga.
Kendrick calls himself dope, equating the value of his verse to a brick of cocaine. But he also says go figure, as in check the figures, and he's serious. Nostalgia is divided perfectly in half to the second. Pusha T has one half which contains one verse, and Kendrick has the other half which contains one verse. And can you guess how many bars there are in each half of the song? 36. Just like Kendrick said, every verse is a brick. And that's why.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Boy, is that a lot of time on one's hands.
Yeah, man, because I was just like, that song's great.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, that's a great beat, and he really gets into it.
Yeah.
You know what, though? What I always, like, is, like, I think about is, like, how did whoever this is think about that? Like, or how did they figure that out? I guess if you're so mathematically inclined that you, you know what I'm saying? Like, to really, really break this down.
Yeah.
And and honestly, like, I'd love to know, like, is this really what Kendrick, I can't imagine it's not, right?
Right, right.
I mean, this.
He's a very meticulous artist. Like, when he comes up with stuff, I mean, I just remember now that you mentioned that and we're talking about this, it just made me think about, like, he had I was talking to Andy about this when I first heard the Overly Dedicated EP. You know, like, I don't know, you remember a time, I mentioned this to Andy, like, do you remember a time where you locked into an artist that is one of your favorites, where you might have listened to their project before, but it's like, oh shit, now I get it, or this really hits home. It was the heart part, I think we were talking about it yesterday. I think it was the heart part one, the one where they do he's rhyming over the intro to How I Got Over, on the Roots album. I think it's part one. I was just blown away by that, and I was like, oh, this guy is really good. That was like 2010 or something like that. And it was just like, oh shit, man, it's just like, wow.
He's, you know, it is kind of like,
it's a hard part too. The Roots record was like do 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 do, and it's yeah. Say what you're gonna say. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, what I was gonna say is like, when you, as a fan of hip hop and as a fan of rap music, you know, you find these particular folks who are so talented and so, like, amazingly gifted that, like, to even just, like, go back and listen to their stuff, you're like, how did you think that up? You know, without going down that rabbit hole of just, like, when you see a comic and, like, I think of, like, Roy Wood Jr. Mm-hmm. When I see him do stand-up, I'm like, how did you get there? Like, you know, like, it's just, I'm always in marvel of how that happens for particular artists.
Yeah. Yeah. It's they had some really remarkable stuff. What do you have any thoughts? You know, this is, I mean, we could talk a little bit about God. Since we're on hip hop, Benny the Butcher and Freddie Gibbs. Have you heard about that?
I have. You know, and I would say, in light of everything that's happened in Buffalo.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, I'm an upstate New Yorker. I'm from Binghamton.
Yeah.
And the fucking racist terrorist is from, I know where he's from.
What is it? Conklin?
He's from Conklin. Yeah. It's right outside of Binghamton.
Okay.
Like, it's a neighboring town. So, I mean, this one that, you know, and this all ties in, but
yeah,
it's like, I mean, this really, obviously any sort of racist mass shooting hits home for me, but this one is very, this one really cuts. You know, I've been through Buffalo a bunch. I went to school outside of Buffalo, you know, I got friends and, you know, people up there. And you know, that's like, I know Tops grocery store. Like, I used to go there all the time when I lived up there.
Yeah.
So I guess I say all that to say that, like, you know, in light of everything that's happened with that right now, that situation is kind of the backdrop. It's like, yeah, I hope they find a resolution, man.
Yeah.
I don't, I don't like, you know, at the risk of being like black on black crime, but like, yeah, I don't like seeing it right now, man. Like,
yeah.
It really, you know, they're two very talented people.
Yeah, and you're getting money. Like,
getting money.
Did records together.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, he was on, Benny was on, what's his name? What is it, Alfredo?
Alfredo, I think so.
Yeah, he was. Frank Lucas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I mean, I saw the clip about it. I saw the video, there was a fight or some shit.
Yeah.
Like I said, man, I really, that sucks. I really don't like seeing it. I hope they can, you know, de-escalate this and, you know, let shit live, let shit go for whatever it's worth, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't know the problems between them, you know, but I feel like I'm old enough to know, like, I know where this shit goes.
Yeah. Like, and they are too. Shit.
One of the reasons
I like them is because they're like late 30s, early 40s, like really talented dudes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, Benny was, he's been rapping forever.
Yeah.
But, you know, Griselda really started to see its success in the mid 2000s, I'd say, or 2010, like 2015, maybe.
Yeah, right.
2016, right. And they've had an impressive run. And yeah, they're like in their late 30s, early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know? So if you're listening, Freddie, and if you're listening, Benny, I hope you guys can figure that shit out, man.
Yeah, yeah. Too talented to be fighting each other.
Freddie's really funny.
Yeah. He was on Bust Down. He was on Power Book 4, Force, or whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, he had a little stand-up run. I saw he's doing a show.
God, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's
funny. Like, I had a chuckle.
Yeah. I mean, some of those guys, are really funny anyway. One is because they're cool, and then two is just like there, you'll get those built in laughs. But what T.I. hasn't learned, you can't be bigger than the art form.
And you have to put in the work.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But like, and there's a measure to what that work looks like. Right. Like, case in point, like, you shouldn't be doing a half hour at an open mic.
Yeah.
Like, that's truly in really leveraging your stardom and leveraging what you have to work to, you know, not jump the line, but it's like, that's not what an open mic is.
Yeah.
Like, an open mic is 5 to 7 minutes, my man.
Right.
You know, like, what are you really doing up there for a half hour?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Whole lot of nothing.
It's just you're spinning the wheels, you know.
Yeah. How's comedy been looking in the city?
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's wild. I feel like, you know, I've had some shows. I've been booked somewhat. But what I'm finding is the times that I do go out and I do hit shows or whatever, there is a completely new generation of comedians.
Oh yeah.
That I don't know.
Right.
Right. Like, and they've probably been doing it, and it's not to say that they're like, they started last week. They could vary. Like, I'm just gauging off of how they're performing. Like, mm-hmm. 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, 3-4 years. And I'm just like, I have no idea who the fuck any of these people.
Yeah.
I don't. Like, and you know, I feel like I'm in that pocket right now where it's just like, you know, most of the people that I know, there's still obviously shows that I know that, and there's comics I know too, but like, also there's people that like have kind of moved into different lanes. Like, they're writing for television. They're podcasting. They're on tour.
Yeah.
They're not doing bar shows. So
yeah,
you know, but yeah, it's a different, it looks like a different landscape, because there's even shows that I don't know, like it just, yeah. These, like, I went to a show last weekend in Flatbush. One of my friends was on the show, and God, I was just like, well, and the show was a dumpster fire.
But, oh, shit. Why? Yeah. Why was it? What made it a dumpster fire?
Well, how long is the show, man? I think the show was like 90 minutes almost.
Okay. You know? Nice.
Like, yeah, but like a little bit more than 90. And it's like, yo, man, that's the limit.
Right. Right.
Like,
right.
An hour and a half is the, and that's for anything, man.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot have people sitting there for an hour and a half, more than an hour and a half, because they're just not going to be fucking with it. Mm-hmm. And like, there was an intermission right before the last comic.
And oh, I'm
like,
no.
I'm like, what?
How, like, many comics were on the show?
Fuck, man. Jesus, how many were there? I think there was like six, maybe seven.
Damn.
And it's that just like
so much.
You, I mean, if you're doing an intermission, that intermission needs to be at half, right? Maybe yeah. a little bit past half of the acts. But even still within that, right? Because there was an intermission, but this was in the middle of a crowded bar. Like, it was just an ambush show's ambush show. Oh, like, I would say, if I had to venture a guess, maybe 80% of those people were just not there for comedy.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah. There was the 20% that were kind of fucking with it. And then those numbers would kind of fit, you know, they would switch, like, you know, or that, like, you know, if someone was doing a little bit better and moved to 30, someone's eating it, they're like, the entire bar just tuned out. So,
oh my God.
But the show reminded me of just like what a show looks like when you're like 2 years into comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I was sitting there just like, in the world, like, let's say it's some world where they know who the fuck I was. And I'm like, hey, do you want to do some time? And you're like, no. I don't. Here. Nope, because not all time is good time. And this
that's
is
fair. Can you say that again, Jim?
Not all time is good time.
That could be the title of the episode.
Oh, all right. Not all time is good time. And it's not. And this was and as I watched this unfurl, I was like, this is not good time.
It's like a Saturday night show.
Was it? No, weekend? Friday. Yeah, it was Friday night.
Friday?
Yep. It's on a Friday night. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, it was fucking wild, man. I was just like, yo, these people are just, they want to get drunk and fuck, and you are getting in the way of that by trying to have people talk about their cocaine use and dick jokes. So,
yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. Abuse. What's the reason? One of the reasons, it's always great to talk to you. I have any excuse to talk to you, but we were on Saturday, we were in our text chain, and we were talking. I think you and I may have been the only ones to have seen the episode of Atlanta, Rich Wigga, Poor Wigga. I think that might be the best of the anthologies.
Go ahead.
It just seemed like everything just came out of left field, and like these pieces were okay. If we can't see our main guys, and you know, you're gonna do this thing about, you're gonna make these attacks on, not necessarily attack, but you're going to put liberal white folks under the microscope, and then people say, well, this one kind of was a divergent thing, and I guess it was, but. But the fact that it was just like the performance of blackness, where it didn't matter what your skin color was, it just that you could perform blackness, and it was just like, ugh. And when I saw them, spoilers for season 3, episode 9 of Atlanta, but when those kids were singing Shy, If I Ever Fallen, I was like, it took me, I was like, I can't fucking believe this. I can't believe, like, it was like it was like maybe South Asian kids were singing it, and it was just, it was, they were good, they were very good, but it was just like, oh my God, the fact. And then there was one kid with a play school basketball.
I saw that.
I was like, what the fuck? I was like, are you kidding me?
Did you catch the two kids who were trying to recreate the Outkast album cover?
No. Mm-hmm. I gotta go back.
Okay. Yeah, there's all two right. kids who are standing there. I think it's, I forget the album name, but it's like one has Bombs Over Baghdad. It's where they're standing in front of an American flag.
Oh yeah, Stankonia.
Stankonia, there it is.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad I got that. I didn't have to look that up.
Yeah, no, good for you, man. I was spinning the wheels. But yeah, there was two kids who were sitting in the back or standing in the back trying to recreate the cover.
Oh my God. I was
like, this is fucking nuts, man.
So and then you and I were just kind of going back and forth. Like, what was that, not necessarily triggering for you, but like, where did that put you? What kind of space did, talk about what kind of space
it put you in? I want to say, like, brilliantly done. I think it was such, before I get into like where I was, where that left me. Yeah.
Hold on a second. I think I hit something. Okay. Sorry. You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. I think I hit Siri. I probably hit. Sorry.
That's all right. Well,
brilliantly done.
We'll take a beat and then we can jump in and you can do it in post.
Action.
So where it left me, I'll get into that, but I just want to just talk a little bit about the show of just how it, the beginning of the episode, right? We see our main character who, for all intent and purposes, is a white kid. Mm-hmm. We are led to believe that. We see the Logan Paul comedy tour. We see pictures of like frat white dudes doing white shit. Mm-hmm. And then we see this kid talking, playing online video games. And I'm like, ooh, this is a white kid, right? Like, this is, I see as a white kid. And then, you know, nigger this, nigger that, and then starts fucking making monkey noises and shit. And I'm just like, ooh, this. And then I was like, oh, this is a racist. Mm. Like, this is a racist white kid. And then he, like, comes out of the kit or goes in the kitchen, he's got a black dad, and you're like, oh, wait, what? There was a minute where I was just like, so is he like a white kid? I was still caught in the fact that he was white. And then I was like, oh no, this is a biracial kid. And he just was racist as fuck. Like, totally a racist as fuck. And just how, I mean, there were just so many thread lines of like race and money and sex and, you know, what it means to be black and all of it, just, it fit together so well. And I just, chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. So where it left me, man, I mean, look, you know, I'm a biracial guy. My dad's black. My mom's white. You know, I identify as black. Like, if you ask me, like, I'm a black person. Like, I consider myself to be black. I've moved through the world as a black person. Life has treated me as a black person.
Yeah.
It is a timeless joke I have of me saying I'm half black, half white, or as the police would say, black.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
There you go. But it really did, like, I mean, a lot of that, short of like screaming nigger at black people, because I've not done that. And that's just a fucking wild thing to even think about. But it really did. A lot of that stuff resonated with me. I mean, we're talking about in the chat, but like, you know, the beginning of the episode, like, I thought a lot about how I grew up and how, like, I had a lot. I would say, if you wanted to quantify, you know, how many black friends do you have? But if you wanted to quantify, like, my friend group as a kid, like, I would say it was probably like 70-30, 70 white, 30 black. And I mean, I spent more of my time with my white friends than I did my black friends. But then as like kind of time went on and as I kind of like moved through high school, and then I was like, oh, this isn't, the world doesn't see me like they see them. And even my friends at the time, like, and this episode really made me think about that. I'm just like, wow, I have some racist white friends.
Yeah. I know we've like, talked a little bit about it before, just like having to cut some people off because of their, your white friends' associations with, like, maybe your white friend wasn't racist, but they, the guy they were hanging out with was, and they don't have to, feel accountable for that person's racism. It's like white people aren't like making people feel bad for being a piece of shit.
Right. And I think to that point too, and I would say I've softened my stance a little bit, not a lot, a little around that. And the softening of that comes from, it's not my job to tell white people not to be racist. It's not my job. And it's not my job to educate them. It's not my job to undo racism because I can't. And
you don't have to fuck with them though.
I don't have to fuck with them. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't. Right. And if you are a racist white, I'm not your friend. But also in that is like, it is white people's job to undo racism. It's their work. You go do it, right? Because I'm not doing it. I only have a couple things I'm responsible for, which is put the key in the door at the end of the day and get home safe.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I got to do. And to keep racist motherfuckers out of my life, I will do that. And I will obviously do whatever it takes to fight the fight as much as I can, but ultimately to undo the structures, it's not my job. It's white people's job. Mm-hmm. So I say all of that to say that, you know, it is up to the white friends that I have to, you got to go talk to your racist white friends. Mm-hmm. You got to go deal with them.
Hold each other accountable. Right.
You have to hold them accountable. Right.
Yeah.
But then I guess that kind of dovetails into, at what point do you just go, no, this person, like, I'm not going to change this person, right? Like, if I'm this white friend or if I'm this white ally and I've got these racist white people in my life, are you like, at what point do you go, all right, this person just is going to believe what they believe? And there's no amount of cajoling and there's no amount of getting these people to think a different way is going to happen. I don't know where that line is. I don't make enough money in the race game to know that.
The race game.
So I don't know, man. You know, like I said, so I think within that space, right, is like, softening of that, of like having to cut those people out. Now, if said white person is like, oh, well, that's just how so-and-so, I'm out of here.
Like, yeah, right. What did you think of the character, the Aaron character? Like, it's a choice that he made, right?
Right. It was. Yeah. And I, you know, it's interesting, right? Because it's like he got his nigga check.
Yeah. Right?
He got arrested. Mm-hmm. His whiteness at the end of the episode didn't save him. Like, he ended up, oh, you got the picture of him right now. And see there, he doesn't look.
He looked like you told me your mom was white. I was like, oh, because you just look like one of my cousins that's light skinned. Yeah. You know, and like with him, with the guy, Tariq Withers, it looks like he's something.
Right.
Like I could tell, like with my homie JL Covan, he didn't have to tell me that his dad was black, but I was like, okay, yeah, because you kind of, it's just like you, certain people, you could just say, well, somebody, something.
Yeah, there's mama something.
Or daddy, you know.
But in, you know, Aaron's case here, like, yeah, he could pat, like,
he could pass. Oh,
he
yeah.
fooled me. He fooled yeah. me. Like, beginning of the episode, he fucking fooled me.
Because did it, in that scene, did he go, like, after he called him nigger, was the next scene in the car with his dad? Or did he go?
I think it was in the kitchen. No, okay. He was in the kitchen because okay.
Let me. Yeah,
he got because his girlfriend texted him and was like, "I got in."
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And then he's pissed. He goes out in the kitchen. His dad. He's like, "Dad, did you like fill out the FAFSA?" And his dad's like, "Hell no, I didn't do that shit. Fuck you."
His dad was so like, dude, do you give a fuck?
Yeah, like, and that's the other thing, though. His dad straight up was just like, fuck you, dude. You figure it out.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, it was interesting to watch this character. And I gotta say, like, and we were talking about it, I feel like he slowly started talking and quote unquote black, right? Mm-hmm. I think he slowly moved into that lane as the episode went on. I could be wrong. I'd have to go rewatch it, but.
Oh, I think this, every time you try to share something, if you try to share like a streaming thing, Zoom won't let you.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it looks like there's like some, I can see it in the
when I'm trying to fast forward through it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was interesting to watch him, and well, but you see him slowly start to kind of not soften his switch his stance. Yes, I guess it is, right? Because
well, yeah, like after the assembly, like when Kevin Samuels
I mean, timing, man.
Oh my god
damn.
Robert Shelley.
Yep.
When he's like, I'm gonna give everybody a scholarship who's black, that moment when all the black, that like split second, and then the cheering. And then his friends are at, I guess they're at lunch and in the quad or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like talking all that shit. And it's like, he's like, yo, this is how y'all talk. Because mm-hmm. at first he probably wasn't aware of it.
Well, or you know what and I speak from experience.
Sure.
Or what was happening in his case, because the thing is with dudes like this and friend groups like this, this was always there. They've always had these thoughts. They've always believed these things that they believed, but it wasn't so in his face, right? It was real subvert. He was kind of like, oh, you know, like, okay. So rewinding the tape of that, right, is when they're in the car, he's in the car with his dad, and they hear about the kid who got shot, the black kid who got shot,
mm-hmm.
On the, you know, unarmed black teen.
Right.
And his dad is like, that's fucked up that happened. And Aaron's like, well, cops yell freeze. Mm-hmm. So why don't you freeze? Right.
Yeah.
Like that's the, you know, so it's like that sort of language. I would absolutely believe that his friends would say shit like that.
Yeah.
And that's where he got it from. And that's kind of how he moved.
There you go.
So
yeah,
I would venture to say that it took this culminating moment of like, you know, black people just get free shit anyway. And, mm-hmm. you know, like that in his face where he's like, whoa, these aren't my, these are racist white people who see me as a decent person.
I had a white club owner basically say something similar. Like you're black, you'll be okay. And then turned to give a white comic who had less experience and wasn't as good, kind of moved him forward.
What, you mean like in terms of like club spots and shit like that?
Club spots and all this stuff. And
Oh, so he's saying like you'll get another opportunity because you're black and someone will give it to you.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he didn't like my manager either. That didn't help. But he was just like, I was like, wow, really?
That's what this is. It's
fucked up, man.
It
fucked up game.
And it is absolutely racist. I mean, we live in a racist world, but even entertainment wise, like,
oh God, yeah.
My God, you know, it's like white in 2020. You remember when white people cared about black people for 3 months and they were like, we're going to do things.
Yeah.
They don't really because they don't give a fuck about Buffalo. I would really love to see all those black squares right now throwing money towards mutual aid and throwing money towards the families of people who got shot. You know, so. But you know, it is, oh, we got the video of him getting his little part.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's
that shit. What did, so, I mean, we could talk more. I want to talk.
Oh, I want to talk about all this, man. I'll talk Let's as keep long going. As you Let's let keep, me, man.
Because it just seems like, I don't know. This one was the most like this. I think
that
this
hit. Ending scene, man. And you got the gif up.
Yeah.
Yo.
And because that's like trolling us hard as shit.
It sure is, man.
Because what did they say? What was the episode description? Why do they
hate black
women?
Women
or something?
Why do they hate black women so much?
Yeah. I've never been more attracted to you in my life. Now that he's accepted his blackness, it's like, oh no.
Oh my goodness. God. Oh, shit. And you know, but it's interesting, right? Because like obviously we're going off of what we see in the scene, right?
Yeah.
Is we see him, you know, pick a side, right? He is mm-hmm. now identifying as black. But symbolically so, he is the caricature of what he thinks a black dude should look like, right? Mm-hmm. Because yeah. He could have for all intent and purpose, he could have stayed dressed the way that he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, kept his hair the way it is or whatever and still been black, right? He yeah. still could have been like, yo, I don't play your white racist shit, but this is how I dress and this is how I feel comfortable, right?
Right, right.
Whereas it, you know, if we're really interpreting the scene as we see it, is like, yo, you don't talk like, that's not how you really talk. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you know, we saw, you know, and it's funny, we can talk about this. This is a whole other segue, but this kid, Aaron, at the beginning of the episode, that's how he talked. Right?
Like, yes.
That's,
yeah.
That's when he grew up. That's who he was. He learned, you know, he had his act, you know, that is the way that he speaks. Right. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the episode, it's just like, but that's not really how you talk.
Yeah.
Like this is what makes it so great is like, you're a caricature, but are you? Because sure, this is like how you feel comfortable, but like, we saw your dialect. We saw the language that you're using.
Yeah.
That's that to me as it's, you know, it'd be like when I got on the podcast today and I started talking like Aaron at the end of this episode, you'd be like, Jim,
Jim, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like this, what are you doing? Like, yeah. That's not how you talk. Right.
Right.
Like, so it was, so I think as we're really unpacking what this is like, yeah, you know, to me, at least as I'm looking at it, it's like, it's one thing like, yo, look, this motherfucker wanted to cut his hair like that. He wants to wear a chain. He wants to dress like that. Look, hey man, you dress how you want to dress. But when you start changing how you talk, to me, that's like, but you're not being authentic.
Right.
I feel like you're really losing your authenticity when you change the way that you communicate.
And then do you think, I mean, because he's 17, 18 years old.
Right.
And then you kind of wonder how much of it is posturing. How much is it to fit in? And he's got a black dad in the dad is in the house.
Right.
So it's kind of like, now you got me thinking back to like, because I watched it twice and I was thinking about how he was talking to those dudes online until he said nigger and then did the monkey noises. Mm-hmm. Cause it just seemed like, it's just like, you're kind of talking normal, but then you hit that nigger kind of hard. He hit it hard.
He hit it, man.
He hit that shit. And it was like, ooh.
Jesus Christ.
But everything else was just kind of like quote unquote normal, like dialect, you know, the dialogue. But then at the end, yeah, he was cooning it up.
Yeah. I mean, it was something very much like, I mean, if you remember the story of like Doja Cat, who was like in like a white supremacist chat room and like
showing her feet.
Yeah, just doing a bunch of crazy shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, it's not too far fetched for like a biracial kid or a biracial person to just, yeah, actively shit on black people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like,
you know, I mean, it's so wild to really see that. And I guess it makes sense in so many ways, because like, if you are a biracial kid, and not in this case, I mean, cause there's a black dad in the house, but mm-hmm. it's just like, if you're surrounded by whiteness and you're so white adjacent, you know, and all you that you see around you is white, then yeah. Like,
yeah,
you're going to internalize this. You're going to not see yourself mm-hmm. as the people that you're talking about. And yeah, you will go fucking nigger. Blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
Like,
right.
And not think anything of it, which
yeah.
is that would just not fucking occur to me.
And I guess I'm thinking almost like, because, well, that didn't work. I'm me trying to be white didn't work. What is, now that I've kind of been broken down, you kind of, did he go home? Did he embrace it? Like, did he just embrace it? Because Kevin Samuels and George Wallace and the other guy broke him down in that. What did you think about the audition? we skipped over it, but what did you think about
it? Oh my God. That was such a wild scene too. Right.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, that was, I mean, I think it was so well done, right? Mm-hmm. Because it really did satirize what it is to be black.
Yeah.
What is this the criteria under which I can now become a black person, is if I can name six things that go in Hennessy?
Yeah.
Or, you know, is it your mama or your mother?
Because I don't know, if I would have passed that. Like, if I, the Hennessy thing, right? I wouldn't. Obviously Coke, but I don't drink like that. Maybe like Coke, ginger ale. Would you do could you do a juice?
You could do what
cranberry?
Is it? Hennessy and Hypnotic.
That's the what's the Incredible Hulk?
That's Incredible Hulk.
That is
Hennessy and Hypno, right?
Yeah.
So you could do that.
Four. Okay, Coke, Hypnotic.
Coke, Hypnotic,
ginger ale.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I don't like. Juice? Cranberry juice? I wouldn't get that one.
So, you know, and it was all just like, you know, it was all. And that, I think that was the, at least to me, the glaring takeaway of that satire is like how subjective all of this was.
Mm hmm.
Like,
it's just whatever Kevin Robert Shea Lee said
was going to be the
method.
Yeah. That was it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and it's so funny because it's like, to me, obvious, like you see, like fucking, I don't know, pick some coon like Ben Carson or fucking, I don't know, Candace Owens or one of these fucking horrible people,
yeah,
where it's just like who are very anti-black, right?
Yeah,
like they're anti-black and racist and all of it, but it's like yeah, you're still black. Like, I look at you and I see that your skin color is not white. You are a black person. So it's interesting to, for me at least, as I look at someone, is in their content and how they see themselves and how they see the world, right? Because if it's like, if you're walking around here, like, you know, all lives matter. And look, believe me, there's plenty of black folks out there who are like, all lives matter. Like, yeah. they exist. They're very real. You know, there's black Trumpers, right?
Right.
Like, so these people very much so exist. But then to me, it's just like, the line is just like, yo, this is like, how are you supporting an active racist? And you are a self-loathing person. So to me, it's just like,
because I've had, I probably not as much as you. I don't know if you've ever had it where some people who were very ignorant would say, oh, you're the whitest black guy I know. I had a coworker, her boyfriend came to visit. He was Puerto Rican, but kind of like that white passing Puerto Rican almost. Yeah. Said that he told his girlfriend that I was like the whitest black guy he had ever met. But I only just shook his hand and said, hey, how you doing? And then he went back with that assessment that I was white acting at my job. And I wasn't like, hi, how are you? I was just like, hey, how you doing? And I never, like, it pissed me off because, one, even if he thought that, why would you tell me? That was on her ignorance. And she's like from the suburbs somewhere. That was when I was in Chicago.
Is she white?
She was white.
She was white? Okay, yeah. So, well, fuck her. And fuck her shitty passing white Puerto Rican boyfriend.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, to answer your question, of course I have. You know, shit. I mean, I've gotten into it with comics who are like, you talk white. I'm like, so you mean like Malcolm X and MLK? Because I use big words and I'm really smart. Is that what you're saying? Does that make me sound
white? Oh, man. I've had certain people that black, it made me so angry. And it was just like,
it used to really make me angry. And in fact, well, I don't want to say used to, because shit, I host a hip hop trivia show.
Yeah.
Not at Beer Rex, but somewhere else. And I, you know, you've done, I don't know if you stuck around. Yeah. But I mean, like, I don't know if you stuck around for trivia.
I did.
Well,
it was last year.
Towards the end of trivia, I have the segment where I read. So I take rap verses and I read them. Mm-hmm. It is really hard to figure out what the verse is when it's not being rapped.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I walk down the street with a black Tech Nine by the waistline, kicking some hype shit. I never claimed to be the best type of rapper, but to show you motherfuckers what I'm after. That's Redman. Right? Tonight's tonight. So if I was like, I walk down the street with a black Tech Nine by the waistline, kicking the hype shit. I never claim to be the best type of rap. Like, if I start to add a bit of a flow to it, yeah, that makes it a little bit easier to identify. So there's a reason why I'm reading it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm reading it. And I shit you not, Chris, this fucking white dude who's sitting at the bar says, and I quote, put some soul in it.
How old was this dude?
It was this dude. And I was like, what?
How old was he? I remember that came up in the thread, but how old is this guy?
If I had to guess, man, I'd say he's probably in his 50s, mid 50s. And I stopped. I was like, what the fuck did you just say to me? Like, I don't fucking know you, A. And that's when I called him a gentrifier. And he got so mad. but it comes back to the point of just like, yo, what, first of all, who the fuck are you talking to? A, who the fuck are you to tell me to put soul into anything? C, this is my culture and this is part of the music that I grew up on and this is a reflection of the people that I see. So you don't get to tell me shit.
Right.
You have, like, your opinion does not mean a fucking thing about this. So, I mean, it is even in that vein, like, I guess for me, that really hit me because it's just like, well, first of all, like, this is part of my job and I'm doing trivia right now and I have to deal with you microaggressing and saying some wildly racist shit.
Yeah.
And I got to handle it versus somebody like, had he been like, wow, you talk white or you talk whatever. Well, yeah, I can break you apart because, oh, now you just sound like a racist. And, you know, and I, again, I really come back to the point. I'm just like, are you saying because I'm using big words, right?
Yeah.
And because I articulate in a certain way that that makes me black or I'm gonna say it makes me white. Like, you lost your fucking mind because you see me right here.
Yeah,
and I will embarrass you.
It's and it sucks when you get it from like a white person. It's all, you kind of roll your eyes and it's like, fuck off. But then when a black person says it, it's not like it doesn't, it just makes me mad because it's like, okay, so, and it's not like I'm trying to be elevated and I'm not like the rest of you niggas with your coonery. It's not even like that. It's just like, you're just trying, 10 toes on the ground, talking about your experience as a comedian, trying to connect with people, and then for certain people to get, oh, you reference Harriet Tubman, or you like, it's just some weird, it's stupid, man. I hate it.
But you know what? I got to be honest. And now don't get me wrong. Like, I've certainly got it from, I've got it from black folks. Like, I've certainly been told by black folks, like, yo, you sound white, or like, oh, why do you talk like, I've heard all of it, right? But I have to say, as time has moved on, I really can't remember the last time that's happened.
Oh, yeah. I
feel like, and not to say that it won't, hey, man, ignorance is across the board. But I think, and this is such a broad brush that I'm painting with, but it's like, we've seen so many like figures of black excellence move through the world, right? Where it's like, you wouldn't fucking dare say that to Barack Obama. You wouldn't, like, as I sit in this fucking chair, the same dude who would be like, you talk white. It's like, would you say that about Barack Obama?
Like, yeah.
The first black president, we'll call it for what it is. Would you say that about him?
He
probably wouldn't do that.
My late great dad would try to troll me on that. He's like, well, you're kind of white. He's like, you're kind of white. I was like, no, I'm not. Oh, because I'm using the education that you busted your ass for. What are you? Like, you made me this way.
Yeah, you created this Frankenstein. You
created this monster. So it's but I think, like, in hindsight is always 20/20, and it kind of took him dying to think like, oh, well, what did he teach me?
Sure.
He was testing me to see where I was at, like, to see what I would say. Some things he'd say things that he knew, already knew the answer to, and he wanted to see what I would say to be like, okay, he's all right. he's not totally fucked up, you know. But that stuff never really stuck to me, because I had cousins that would say, oh, why are you going to that white school? How come you didn't go to A&T? I was like, well, this is where my parents said I was going, so they're paying for it. Are you paying for it? And you didn't even finish college. You had a chance to finish. You didn't even finish. So what the fuck are we talking about here?
Yeah. What is this conversation? Right.
Yeah.
And I think, like, at least for me, as I kind of move through the world, is when I left Binghamton and I went away to college, I went to Niagara and I started to meet.
How far away was Niagara
from Binghamton?
Yeah.
3.5-4 hours.
Yeah, that's like a good amount. That's like a good way, ways away.
Yeah. And it's also, and it was also a place and space where it's like, I was meeting Black folks that I became friends with. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that I didn't have Black friends in Binghamton, but this was like, I mean, look, these were like my, like I had Black friends back in Binghamton who were still in the hood.
Yeah.
And we're doing hood shit, right? I'm now meeting Black folks in Niagara who are not still stuck in the hood.
Yeah.
And are trying to, you know, they're moving in a different route. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I'm meeting this expanded friend group that, you know, I really wanted to gravitate, that I gravitated toward. Not even wanted to, I gravitated towards it.
Yeah. You know? And that's kind of like the unspoken thing about higher education. That part of the socialization where you not only you're learning, you're becoming smarter, but I mean ideally you are, but like
right.
You're that social stratification, the good part of it where it's like, oh, I'm meeting this person from this different part of the world, this part of the country. This guy looks like me, but he talks different. And he or she has these different experiences where it just kind of opens you up more. And once you get to see more of the world through those people and in your travels, all that shit's supposed to, your mind is supposed to expand. You know? Right.
So 100%.
And I think it's just that going away that just like my aunt said to me a long time ago when I moved away, she said, you're going to change, but the people around you a lot of times stay the same.
Yeah.
And it's through that.
100%.
That expansion. And it's not even like you're trying to be better than anybody. It's just the path that you think that you should be on, you know?
Well, and I also, you know, and I really come to this point too, where it's just like, I don't know about you, but it's like, I have some friends that I grew up with that like, you know, I've outgrown the friendship.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've gone in a different direction. It's not a bad thing. I don't have like animosity towards these people that I am friends with, but the friendship has, it moved through a certain space and it's not quite what it was like, and I don't, you know, I say, and I think there is in so many ways, when you leave Binghamton, you go to New York, you leave somewhere, you go somewhere and you come back and people are just like, oh, you think you're better than us because you left. And I like to go, yeah. Yeah, I do actually.
With that bullshit you talking. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like, what, you think you're better than me because you read about something and have an informed opinion? Yeah, I do, actually. I took the time to really read and think about the
thing. Now, those friends you grew up with, like, not necessarily the Black friends, but you were saying, like, the white friends you were around, was it, how diverse is it? Were you friends with certain people just through circumstance? Like, it just happened to be a bunch of white kids at this school that you connected with? Or
so I you know, it's interesting. I think as I think about like the high school friends who I'm not friends with anymore, they all fucking sucked. I'm only friends with one of them, actually out of that group. Mm-hmm. But like, I think I became friends with them because in terms of like our, I don't want to describe like, strata and where we were is like we were smart kids who like drinking and doing drugs.
Okay.
Right. So, and not to say that that was what our friendship was solely based on, but
your kids.
Yeah, we were kids. And like, again, we were smart, but we weren't like, oh, we're not going to go out in the woods and get fucked up. Like, you know, we were still like partying and shit like that. And, you know, I became, that's how I kind of became friends with them, was kind of through that sort of, not just, again, that wasn't like the sole activity per se, but that was just kind of the mindset of like that, that we kind of fit into that, that rung of the ladder. You know, so I, but I think like as time eventually moved on, it was just like, yo, I'm not like, I don't look like you guys. Like, and I don't like the same things that you like.
When did you start to notice that? When did you?
I think I started noticing that really. And like, well, I started noticing it, I think in like seventh grade.
Okay.
I think is when like I 12, really,
13, yeah.
Well, yeah, when I noticed it, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't really move on it. I okay. still was friends with them. I still, you know, kind of kept those groups and shit like that. But it really started to click with me when I was in 10th grade. And then I started to kind of gravitate away from them. And they were gravitating away from me too, I think, just in terms of like, because they just didn't, they weren't fucking with me and they just didn't want, they didn't like me that much.
That kind of happened with a white friend that I had in junior high. We went to the same high school. And then towards the end of that, our, that tenure, I could see where he was. He went home.
Yeah,
he went to his wife. The shout out to Randolph Terrence. It's like you go home, you back yeah. to your his people. So it was just like, oh, you guys, you made that choice, and hey, I got my friends or whatever. So you know,
yeah,
it's what it is.
And it is. And you know, I think like you know, and I feel like I can. I mean, this is like a separate group, but it's like. Things I think really crystallized for me. I mean, and I'd always like, again, I, this was after 10th grade and I was just like, oh yeah, like the world, not only does the world see me differently, but like, I'm also seeing the world differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like the world is looking at me one way, but now, you know, I'm getting followed around a store. I'd always been, but I didn't realize it, but now I'm seeing it. I'm just like, oh, this is happening.
That's interesting that you say that. Cause it's like now, the world makes that decision for you.
Yeah.
That you're different, whether you want to believe it or not. And then maybe that's the awakening that Aaron has. The world yeah. said like, yo, you ain't a nigga. You trying to be one now. It's like with like the great Paul Mooney. Everybody want to be a nigga, but till it's time to, was it till it's time to be a nigga or.
Everybody wants to be, or what is it? Everybody wants to be a nigga, but nobody wants to be a nigga.
Yeah, basically. Right.
Like you want to listen to music. You want to, you know, you want to, you love the culture, but the tag that comes with it, you don't want.
Right.
Right. But like, I think for me, you know, look, I'll tell you the story. It's time has passed, but I was, I think it was in my early 20s, and I was at my house, and these white kids called me. I was friend, quote unquote, friends with them. Uh-huh. And they were like, hey, man, these guys got a problem with us. They were calling you a nigger and da 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 da. And I was like, what? And so then we all got in a car. We went out to another town to go find these guys. We find one of the guys. And then before anything happens, the cops show up and I'm the only one who gets arrested.
Whoa. How old were you again?
I was in my early 20s.
Okay.
So I want to say I was maybe like 20. I want to say I was 20. Yeah. I was 20 years old. So this happens. I'm the only one that goes to jail. Well, I didn't go to jail. I got arrested. I go down to the station. I'll never forget. I was in the back of the car and these two cops were like, hey, you were going to fuck that guy up, huh? You were going to like, kick the shit out of him. And I go, well, you know what? He would have really gotten hurt if I did that. And I would have really felt really sad if I hurt that person, because I know that anything that's said can and will be used against me in a court of law. So I was like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm really sorry that I made that decision. And I can't believe that was something I was going to do. I'll never forget those cops took like a beat and they go, so are you in school?
Yo. I think that's a great way to end it, man. That's a great place to end it. You got to end on a punchline. Jim Hirsch, man, that was fucking great, man. Thank you. You got anything to plug? I know you got some stuff to plug.
Yeah, man. If you're in New York City, when's this coming out?
It'll be out this weekend.
This Sunday. Weekend? Oh, yeah, Saturday, oh okay, Sunday. Dope. So if you're in New York City, you want to come by Muddy Waters Comedy Show. It's on the 27th, which is a Friday. Yeah, May 27th at 8 o'clock at Fulton Grand. It's a comedy show. You can buy tickets from Muddy Waters Instagram page. It's a great comedy show. Me and Veronica Garza host it. It's always a great time. Come through for that. And also Trivmatic, which is a hip hop trivia and stand up comedy over at Beer Wax. Which is going to be this Wednesday. I don't have a calendar in front of me, whatever that day is.
This Wednesday, tomorrow, which is next
week. Yes, tomorrow. They're not going to be time traveling.
Yeah, so you will have missed it. But there will be others.
Yes, but you want to go follow, you want to follow Beer Wax on Instagram, and you want to follow me, so you know where to find those shows.
It's a really cool spot. I enjoyed my time there. It was fun.
Yes. And you were, you didn't realize how famous you were.
I didn't?
No, man. Well, I remember I introduced you to the owner. Shout out to the homie, Chris Maestro. And he listens to Swatches and Boomboxes, which is a great hip hop podcast. I hosted the co-host with Neil Charles. And I introduced you to Chris and he goes, oh shit, you're Lambert. Like
that's funny.
Your last name has become a coin of phrase on the podcast, right? Because it's like
forgetting to pick an album or a song or something like that. What is it?
Yeah. The Roots. One of the first episodes. The Roots were the ones that you left off the list, and you got fucking tight.
I was mad. Yeah, yeah.
You're like, I can't believe I fucking forgot them, man.
Yeah.
So. You know, but yes. So Trivmatic, which is hip hop trivia, stand up comedy. It's at Beer Wax. Follow them on IG. Jimsearchcomedy.com too is a good place to find my show dates and shit like that. And that's how you find me.
Awesome. Jim, thank you again for doing this, man. Everybody, thanks for listening. And I will talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.